I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 235. Is it episode 235? There's a great question. So you noticed you got a rerun 2 days in a row, and I apologize for that. I have been in three cities in 3 weeks. My life has been either on the road or back home working nearly open to close every day at the day job, and then back on the road consulting. So I'm off this weekend, and there's still a variable question mark about the following weekend. I have it marked off, and maybe going to consult on that weekend as well. So yesterday I did an interview that is one of my favorite episodes of all time. It's both an interview I've been dying to do and an interview I've been dying to partner up with someone else to do. And, we had a tech tragedy. So I encountered a combination of situations in the tech that I use that I just had never had before. And I thought I had it dialed. And I listened to the first segment and it sounded great. I listened to some of it during the break and I jacked up the last three segments. It's completely my fault and my misunderstanding of how my technology works. And so I've said before, I mean, if you've been listening for a while, you've heard this. We are like a startup. We are like this guerrilla media thing. We're actually getting more and more established. And if I was, traveling all over God and creation and I could keep a regular schedule and do a live show, then we would never have tech problems because the guys at Breadbox Media are just like absolutely spot on solid at what they do. I'm the human error in the equation, but you know what, as G.K. Chesterton has said, and I quote so often, if a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. And, I think this is worth doing. So, it's also worth doing well if you can, and I'm trying to get there. Anyway, three cities in 3 weeks, man. Early morning episode. This is just, I am completely bedraggled. Is that a word? Bedraggled? It sounds like it's a word. If it's not a word, I'm going to make it up. You know, Shakespeare made up words. I mean, there's words in our English language that we think are like time honored, you know, old English words, and they are but at the time of Shakespeare, he made them up. So if bedraggled is not a word, which I'm pretty sure it is, I'm going to make it a word. I wish I was more on fire and just kind of alert to tell the story, but I'm going to talk about, my weekend. And, you know, the first show of the week is usually the weekend recap kind of anyway, the first segment at least. But I had an experience this weekend on a consulting trip that I honestly believe that this was something along the lines of like what happened and then how those stories kind of got written about to other people who had already heard the story firsthand or who was there and they're making reference to something that they both know what they're talking about. And then we have to try to figure it out. But I have a feeling that like, this is like the kind of experience that would have got a passing reference in the New Testament if we were still writing letters in that way. You know, do you know what I mean? It's like, this was the kind of experience that people in the early church had when God was moving. And then they would make reference to that situation in a letter, you know, when they would say, you know, my heart goes out to you every time I think of how God works so mightily and how, so much was provided for us in Flint, Michigan. You know, that's that. And you would go, what happened to Paul in Michigan that, you know, I have a feeling that I experienced that kind of a movement this weekend. So, I'm just going to take the, the show to kind of recap some things that I experienced this weekend. So for the record, the community of Flint, Michigan, the Catholic community of Flint, Michigan, which why are they called the Catholic community of Flint, Michigan? Hold on. I want to get to that. Brought me in as a consultant. And so I'd been talking to a representative, Beth, from their community there. And I'd done a conference call with her and Father James. And so they ended up, and so I was just going in for a fairly straightforward, typical consulting gig that I normally do, which is come in, they want to turn an old rectory into a coffee house. I'm going to walk through, figure out which walls are load bearing, which walls are not load bearing, and then try to find a way to put a space together, carved out of this pre-existing space without, you know, having to rebuild the building or something to that is ergonomic to the type of hospitality space that can welcome people and give them a place to dwell and a place where you can build something where you can earn the right to be heard through craft, justice, beauty, and hospitality. And so I go in and that's all I was going to do. That was my plan, was to go in, take a bunch of pictures, get PDFs of drawing of plans and stuff, walk through kind of, and, you know, a lot of pitching the vision and trying to get people this, you know, usually my life consists of people who don't get it. They think they kind of get it, bringing me in, and then I get there and they realize that what I'm talking about is not what they were talking about. And then you spend a good portion of the time preaching and kind of sharing and talking about what it is that I do and what it is that I'm calling people to do and why it's worth doing and why, even though it's less religiously overt in ways, it's actually more Catholic. And so I walk in. So anyway, so that was my plan. That was my plan, to just go up there, fly in. Here was the plan for the weekend: fly into Detroit, rent a car, get some White Castle. Yes, I'm a little redneck. It's been a while, and I needed a White Castle fix. Get some White Castle. go to Flint, which I thought was like a suburb of Detroit or something. I thought it was going to be like very, very urban and very like, you know, I thought it was just like crazy industrial and lots of big tall buildings and brick and, you know, kind of, I just had no idea. Pardon me a second. Excuse me. I have no easy way with the tech that I use to stop and start that. If I had not let you listen to that sneeze, I would have had to stitch back together. I would have to do a new track and stitch it all back together. So I apologize, but I don't. So my plan was go up there, and they were having an art walk thing, and I was just going to watch this show because this priest was playing a show, right? And I told him, I'm like, I was dreading that part. I was like, a young priest with a guitar going to play a show. I'm like, this is going to be terrible. This is going to, every other time somebody's invited me to anything remotely like that, it's like, oh God, this is so bad. And I'm going to have to smile and nod and go, oh no, that was great. It was really interesting. And try, you know, and then I was going to go through a weekend of some, you know, hanging out with some nice people, figuring out which walls come down, meeting with a bunch of people on a pastoral team and that are doing some different initiatives in the city, and then meet with a bunch of contractors and potential contractors and architects and start the process. And then I was going to go down to Pinckney, Michigan, and see my friend Mark, who is my partner on the Over the Counter podcast, who's on sabbatical, doing his licentiate thesis, and just hang out with him and his kids and see they're people I normally hang out with in Denver all the time, and they're like nearby, so I booked an extra day on the trip to just go see Mark. And while we were there, we're going to go to Cultivate Coffee and Tap House. And the other Catholic coffee guy on earth, Billy Kangas, has this really beautiful project there, and we were going to interview him, right? And we were going to do a takeover of the counter position by over the counter, my podcast with Mark. We were going to basically just do an episode of the podcast on the show. And I was going to come home, get some sleep, get up and go to work, right? That was my plan. And all that happened in a sense, you know, but, suffice to say, this was one of those weekends where you just kind of come in half asleep, ready to just kind of not be challenged, not to experience anything that you didn't experience before and not to, and to just come in, do your job, preach the vision, do what you do well and move on. And then, you know, and do something. I mean, I'm not like I was phoning it in. I mean, I was a little tired after three cities in 3 weeks, but I was actually really stoked about this project. They all seem really nice and they seemed like they really got it on the phone. So I thought this was going to be a really fun weekend. I was expecting a great weekend, but I wasn't expecting kind of the level of impact that, that it had on me. And so in, I just want to tell you guys about this weekend. I want to talk to you about what they're doing in Flint, why it's so unique and why it's so beautiful. I want to talk about Flint itself. And before that, and talk about how they're answering what happened to Flint and Mike, just and just kind of, you know, as I've said before, this is reality filtered through the lens of an individual human person. I am not an authority. I'm not a historian. I'm not a catechist. I'm just telling you, here's a guy who's just, you know, fairly thoughtful and open to reality, and this is what happened to me this weekend, and this is what I thought about it, and this is how it affected me. You know, some of you seem to like that. All right, so let's go to the break. When we get back, we're going to be in Flint, Michigan. Are you listening to The Counterposition? Thanks for coming out.
Let my sacred word to mutter, ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so I'm just telling you about my weekend in Flint, Michigan on a consulting trip and how, I honestly don't know how I could tell the story of this weekend and all the intricate, beautiful providential detail in one show. I mean, I know you're thinking you went on a consulting trip, Whaley. How hard can that be? You showed up, you looked at some walls, decided whether they could come down or not, looked at the plans, tried to carve out a space that works. Listen, so you don't even know. all right. So started off pretty normal. Great experience at the airport. Big fan of Clear. And I got to pre-taste TSA pre. Because they were just moving people fast and they were having dogs sniff you and stuff. So they knew there weren't any bombs or anything because they've got these bomb sniffing dogs checking you out. And so it was getting kind of, it was actually moving really fast. It wasn't even nearly as backed up. And all of a sudden, this guy comes and goes, "Here, come on, you can go to pre. So I went through the Clear line, went right into the line for the security, and they opened up the pre-security and just let a bunch of us go through pre. So we didn't have to take off anything. I just threw my bags up on the belt, walked right through, picked them up on the other side, bada boom, bada bing. Spectacular. Just absolute spectacular. I mean, absolutely spectacular. I was just like, I cannot wait till my pre gets approved. I keep checking the email. It's not coming yet. That says it's processing to call them if it doesn't happen in 30 days. So TSA pre, right through, kind of a crowded seat, kind of a crappy flight, not a big deal. little tiny Asian lady just slept next to me the whole time. If I'm remembering the right flight, I've been on so many planes in the last 3 weeks, 6 planes in the last 3 weeks. So anyway, so I get there pretty easy process. Oh, it's awesome too, by the way. So I get in the Hertz shuttle, and there's this big old black dude, and he's kind of almost doing a show, like, while he's driving. He's like, welcome to Detroit. This is the Motor City and all that stuff. And, you're telling us about, kind of in funny ways about where to get our cars and gold members and all this stuff. And he's like, okay, now just sit back and relax. I'm going to listen to the radio. I might sing a little bit. This is still Motown. This is what we do. And he just he had some soul station on. He was just driving, like, with the mic on, just like singing along with the soul music. And it was amazing. I was like, beautiful, beautiful airport. Cool guy in the shell, like, Detroit. Well done. I'm a fan. So I go through the little process. I get my little Dodge SUV thing, which I normally don't rent an SUV, but it was cheaper for some reason, so I did. And so I head north, White Castle. Yes, I admit it. I love White Castle. I think it's because they put liver in the burger. That's a little secret. They put beef liver in the burger. I'm a big fan of beef liver. I don't know what it is. I grew up on White Castle. It was a special treat because it was all the way up in Festus, Missouri. And so you got it when you went to St. Louis. And so I don't know. I just associated it with when I lived in Cape Girardeau and we had a White Castle, I almost never went to White Castle. So as Tim Ferlin will attest, when I went to Cincinnati, we had to go to White Castle. We're eating in all these highbrow, cool hipster restaurants and stuff. I had to go to White Castle. So got some belly bombers. And so traffic was insane. And I get in there like at the absolute last minute, and I walk in. So, and when I got off, the plane, I got voicemails and kind of like emails and stuff about bad news from another project. Oh, and I'm like, oh, just God, I've just really been, I'm just frustrated, and I'm like, it's so hard to work in the Catholic world. It's so hard to work within Catholic structures. It's just so much easier whenever I was a Protestant, and everybody wants to reach people and get, they might not know how to get people, but they really want to get people and they want to know how to get people. So I was kind of discouraged, but consoling myself with White Castle. And so I pull in to this church, and I had seen pictures of the church, but it just didn't do it justice. It is beautiful. The St. Matthew's in downtown Flint, Michigan. And I walk in, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. And as I walk in the back, there are two big paintings, and they are like crazy significant. Like, they're like absolutely like a God wink towards the bad news email I'd gotten, like, gonna be okay. And I was like, okay, what's going on? That's kind of cool. So, fun coincidence, no big, but now here's something that happens. I had already like randomly seen some dude that I in the airport, just kind of a weird coincidence, but not a big deal. Now this kind of thing happened, and I'm like, what? Okay. This is kind of a funny coincidence. Now, here's the way God works with me. I don't know why he's always done this. God will give me a couple of weird, just kind of like they don't really have a lot of meaning, or maybe an increasing meaning, weird coincidences. But as best I've discerned over the years, it's just to get my attention and just to get me thinking along the lines of watching details and watching for serendipity and watching for providence. I don't know why he just says, over time I figured out that if I bump into some random dude, like I had a crazy coincidence in New York one time and then turned around and bumped into some people I was right behind in line in LaGuardia who are from my hometown in Missouri. And then I'm sat next to a woman on a plane that was a massive providence that changed my life. So two kind of like coincidences in a row. And I was like, oh, it's going to be that kind of weekend, God. All right. Which, a lot of times when I go to a consulting gig, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I couldn't put this on my brochure, but things happen. Cool stuff kind of happens. It's just I'm Mr. Magoo around and bump into interesting things that are solutions to problems for this client, even though I didn't mean to do so. It's just my weird charism, right? So I go in and they're, you know, and they're kind of setting up for the show, and we have the show, and this young thin priest with a beard comes up and introduces himself, and he seems really nice and really kind of cool. And I'm like, okay, cool. And, you know, I get sat down and he starts playing a show, piano and then a guitar. And it is Father James from St. Matthew's. And I mean, he is incredible. I mean, he's a great singer songwriter. He's an incredible performer. Like, I want to bring him to Denver to play a show with my friend Perry. I mean, he's amazing. It's the absolute opposite of what I expected. I expected like a well-meaning, nice people with some acoustic guitars playing some Matt Maher songs and praise and worship stuff or something. No, this guy is like, you know, Elliot Smith meets Sufjan Stevens or something. I mean, just amazing. Or Surf Jam Stevens, as I jokingly call him. So I watch his show and I'm like, okay, this is going to be a very different show. You know, it's going to be a different event. And I got interrupted with, stuff going wrong back in Denver with cash registers and stuff like that. And I was like, oh gosh, I had to miss a song and go outside and put out fires. And so then we get settled in, we leave there, we get settled in, they put me in the rectory where I'm staying. We have a drink and hang out and talk. And already I can see pretty quickly that these are people that really, really get it. And almost immediately I can see that me and Father James are like hitting it off in a huge way. Now, you ever meet someone and you're like, inside of 10 minutes of talking to them, you're like, I'm going to be friends with this person for the rest of my life. I mean, it happens to me about once every 6 months to a year. The last time that it happened before this was with Adam Beach. You've heard him on the show. He told a story about almost getting shot by Wendell Berry. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back through my podcast, find the episode, the interview with Adam Beach and how he almost got shot by Wendell Berry. It is a spectacular episode. And, but I just one evening and just having some drinks and hanging out and talking with, Father James, I'm like, all right, I'm going to be friends with this guy forever. Now my friend Mark Giacek had already warned me, I'm going to be friends with this guy, right? You guys are going to really get along. And he was right. We really do get along. We're very different people in a lot of ways, but really, really alike in a lot of ways. So I go to bed, get up, and we go to breakfast. So I got kind of more, a wider version of the team with us at breakfast, and we just talk about the, what they're doing there in Flint, Michigan, what the Catholic community of Flint is, why it's different than, why it's kind of a model and an experiment, what brought that experiment on, and why it's so interesting. And, instead of talking about that conversation, when I get back from the break, I want to tell you what happened next, and then I'm going to tell you about how they're responding. Because what happened next is Father Tom, who's the pastor of Flint, Michigan, and you're thinking, well, pastor of which church? He's the pastor of Flint, Michigan. That gives you an idea of where we're going with this. He drives me around Flint, tells me the history of Flint, tells me the change in what happened in Flint from the rise and the fall of the audio industry, the struggle to redefine the level of poverty, and then this giant water crisis they just had, and what the situation is, and just drove me around. And this man who's been there for years just gives me the firsthand experience. So when we get back, I want to take you on that drive with me and Father Tom a little bit, and then I want to talk to you about how they responded. All right, so you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so when last I left you, I was about to embark on a trip around Flint, Michigan with Father Tom, the pastor of Flint, Michigan, which before I started the show, I forgot to look up his last name. But suffice to say, he's Father Tom, and he's a pastor of Flint, Michigan. So you could probably Google that if you had to know. really nice guy. So Father Tom, all these other guys are like that I've met so far, kind of like these young, kind of like fairly fresh priests. Father Tom's an older guy, probably, you know, older than me, probably in his 50s. I know he's older than me. He's indeed pretty good, solid in his 50s, maybe in his early 60s. It's hard to tell. And I didn't ask. But just a nice older priest, but not like an old priest. Why am I going on and on about how old Father Tom was? I don't know. Anyway, suffice to say, just not one of these kids that are young. The rest of the priests, they were all like way younger than me. He was older than me. And so he's their pastor. So he puts me in a truck, drives me around Flint, and tells me, say, Flint, Michigan, had the highest per capita income of any city in America. It is the home to GM. It was the home to Buick. It's home to all these car factories. And so back in the heyday of Detroit, Flint, Michigan was off the chart. I mean, it was beautiful, beautiful 1950s, kind of early 60s, just deep, deep, deep prosperity. I mean, people were just doing well. And there's about 300,000 people there, I think, and 100,000 of them. At the height of it, just at the population of the city, two-thirds of the city, which I think was a couple 100,000 people, were auto workers. So out of this, the people who live there, two-thirds of them are employed by the auto industry. So you're just talking about a town that has one employer, for all practical purposes. And, you know, with the kind of the collapse of Detroit and the collapse of the American auto industry in a lot of ways, and as the Japanese vehicles started coming in, all stuff, things started shutting down and getting slower and slower. And now it's like, I mean, he took me past what they have, these holes, they call them. There's the Buick hole and the whatever, these different holes. And because they've just basically torn all the buildings down, tried to scrape the soil and stuff. It's an environmental problem, kind of like a disaster. The ground is contaminated from so many years of manufacturing of vehicles on it. And I mean, he drove me past a Buick hole, and it is, I don't know how to describe it. It is the size of the Denver Tech Center, maybe more. I mean, it is, you just keep driving and you get off and you get on another exit and it's like, there's still the Buick hole. I mean, it is giant. It's probably the size of my hometown of 4,500 people. I mean, it is a huge, huge expanse of absolutely nothing. It's amazing. And when you get the feel of the scope of what used to be there by what isn't there now, you just don't normally see desolation on that scale. Now, speaking of desolation, what shocked me about Flint is that I'm used to urban decay. I have worked in homeless ministry a little bit in St. Louis. I have gone into abandoned factories and looked for people that were like, you know, living in these factories and doing drugs and stuff. I have seen, like, I live in Denver, Colorado. We go to places. I'm around big urban area and in poor urban areas, all, you know, in Denver. I've seen it in LA. This is like crazy prosperous suburbia that is now falling apart and crime ridden and just hopeless. I mean, it is amazing. It's like a block of six houses that you can tell were all really beautiful, and they'd be in any other town, they would be these really beautiful old houses built in the 40s and 50s that people would be remodeling and taking care of. And they're just gorgeous, big lawns, huge mature trees everywhere. I mean, I saw a park with more trees than any park I have ever seen. It was almost too many trees. I'm like, how do you couldn't play ball there or something. You just have to walk the dog or walk through. It was like walking through the redwoods or something. These huge trees so close together. It's just absolute beauty, naturally. And out of this block, six houses, one of them will be being lived in, and the rest of them are all falling down. One of them has been burned out, and they're all covered in gang signs. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Such absolute decay and just kind of oppressive kind of desolation, right in the context of absolute beauty. This is a beautiful city full of decay. And it was, I don't know how to describe it. It shook me. It really did. It shook me. And then he talked to me about Catholicism. This place used to have, I think it was like 9 or 12 Catholic high schools, 12, it was 9 Catholic high schools, 12 Catholic parishes. It was just, the place was just swimming in Catholicism, elementary schools, all this different stuff. It was just insane. And now there's one Catholic high school and like 4 parishes left, and 2 of them are about to kind of become oratories. And there's just two or three functioning parishes left, and a couple of them are kind of semi-empty. And so the city has collapsed, and in some ways just the situation in Catholicism, I mean, he just drove me past church after church. Yeah, we sold this one, we had to get rid of this church, and so-and-so bought it, and they're trying to do this in it, and you know, it just, they're just down to a few parishes in this city that used to be what seemingly must have been one of the more Catholic cities in America. I mean, based on the population and the number of high schools and stuff. And then there's obviously the water crisis. So they switched municipal water sources and didn't do the testing well enough and all that. And it was evidently to save some money or something. And they brought in water from another source and treated it in a way that left it with too high of a pH, or too low of a pH, I guess it would be, to was way too acidic, and it leached all the surface out of the pipes and exposed the lead in them. And so now the people had like just dangerous levels of lead in their water. And you've heard about that. It's been all over the news. They switched back to a different water source, and they're trying to, the pipes are remineralizing a little bit. But in the long run, there's just no solution for this short of tearing a bunch of houses down and repiping everything. So you have a city that was already a half dead, dying city. And then now you can't drink the water. So if we could, everyone's kind of focused on fixing the water, as well they should be. But if you fix the water, then you'd be right back to this dead post-industrial city that was already in desolation. And so there's a certain kind of being kicked while you're down hopelessness that pervades the situation. And it really, I felt it. And I just didn't know. I just kept trying to go, well, okay, so if we could just get some, well, no. If we just had, no, well, if you could just get these people some, well, no. I mean, you couldn't find a linchpin that would kind of open up everything else, right? So anyway, I got to start speeding this up or I'm not going to get to the end of it. So anyway, the way that they responded in the Catholic world was they went back to what I would say is kind of an early church model. And they made they're doing kind of a pastoral experiment that, as far as I understand, a lot of people are watching. So they made Father Tom the pastor of Flint, Michigan. He's the pastor of the whole city. And they gave him a team of 4 young, dynamic, intelligent, ardent priests of different kind of personality type, different skill sets from different places. And they are his team. And now they broke the parishes down into, instead of just breaking them apart by geography and liturgical style or whatever we kind of shop for churches in the modern world, they broke it into mission. So St. Matt's is becoming the downtown. It's right by University of Michigan Flint. It's going to become the student parish, hence why we're building a coffee house, right? The cultural center, you know, lectures and art events and all this stuff, and that's going to become that. St. John Vianney is their educational parish. They have a big school, and they're just giving all kinds of scholarships to the kids from the neighborhoods and stuff to get them in there and get them back into Catholic schooling. And then they've got St. Mary's, I believe it is, over, and they're establishing a Catholic worker presence where they're going. It's basically the social justice outreach to the poor. There's a food pantry there, and we've got some plans for collaboration with that parish to do something. And so those are the three main parishes that are in the city limits, and they're demarcated by mission, not by just like liturgy and music and all that stuff. And you go where, you know, they're doing something different. But see, Father Tom is the pastor, and all these priests work in these parishes, and they preach in each other's parishes, and they each pastor one, but they preach in each other's parishes, and they assist the bishop in his overall vision for the city, which looks dramatically more like the way the early church ran, which is where we want to go next. It's absolutely amazing what they're doing there. And so, but now I got one segment to tell you all the cool stuff that happened this week, and I have no idea how I'm going to do it. This may bleed into the next episode. All right. So you're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. I'll see you on the other side.
Then all the color glass that painter's palettes mash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so last segment, trying to tell you what was so cool that happened to me this weekend. So I've given you the long story. I've given you, and I've gotten you up to a ride with Father Tom and the kind of the background and the Catholic response in form to this city in Flint, Michigan, right? And so that day I come back, and this is on Saturday, and I come back and we kind of hang out and have a little debrief and do a walkthrough of the site. Which is kind of the typical stuff I do. This is so far in form, this is all quite typical, right? And so we do a walkthrough, we talk about, and they were wanting to use X amount of space. And I'm like, no, you're going to need way more space than that. Let's look at which walls can come down. And we're talking about the shape of the shop and where the entrance can be and how deep the remodeling is going to go and, you know, yada, yada. Fairly typical stuff, along with all the, here's why we're doing this. Here's why we do this. No, you don't want to do that because the experience of the person is this when they come in. Okay. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. Right. And I'm spending the bulk of my time is spent with Father James and with Beth, these two people on this pastoral team that are kind of spearheading this project, this coffee house. And so, so here's where it gets interesting. They had already told me that they got a meeting set for me on Monday morning with this woman named Mary, who's trying to establish a Catholic worker house. And, they want to build something innovative and different for the poor to outreach and to give them some jobs and some hope and something more than just a handout, right? And so they're kind of in some ways a movement like the Catholic Worker, but the Catholic Worker is the inspiration in the model, right? Which is founded by Dorothy Day, who's kind of working on the possibility of her sainthood. She was a former communist that was a champion of the poor in New York, and Go look up Dorothy Day. If you want to good read The Long Loneliness, read Loaves and Fishes, read, watch Entertaining Angels. The movie's a pretty decent kind of narrative intro to who she is. Anyway, so with that afternoon, after we'd went through the stuff, they're like, I need to check out some of the local coffee houses. And they had walked me past a couple of them on the first night during the art walk. And I just kind of seen downtown how popping it was, and which I thought that was indicative of the whole city, which it's not. It's just right by the university is kind of like alive and thriving and kind of expanding. So I find this shop that isn't on the list that they gave me. And I look at it and I'm like, it's got all the marks of a good third wave shop. I don't know if they're roasting or not. They might be a supplier. They might be a vendor. They might be competition. Who knows? Let's go check them out. Plus, I need a decent cup of coffee. So I go over to this coffee house and I walk in and it's a crazy simple, very, very minimalist coffee house that clearly someone has thrown together and did everything by hand. And it was put in on the cheap, but very lovingly and very purposely. And I come in, there's a kid with a beard, you know, red beard behind the counter, pulling some shots, ask me how I am, you know, great hospitality. He's got that ministry of presence that I kind of prize so much. And, we start talking and it turns out he finds out who I am. And I started not to even tell him who I am or why I was there. And I tell him and he's like, well, that's why I do this. Like, really? And so we start talking about why he does coffee and, you know, why he's building this place and all this. And long story short, it turns out that he and his wife are like right on the cusp of wanting to become Roman Catholics. And his best friend is him and his wife are on the cusp of becoming Roman Catholics. And they've been reading Loaves and Fishes and Dorothy Day and all this stuff, and they want to start a Catholic worker house. And so I'm like, well, I'm meeting Monday with people starting a Catholic worker house. And so they're like, well, you know, and this one guy's like, well, look, see, we want to do something different. We have a 100-acre farm and we want to do one of the farm models where, you know, we do something with this farm, right? Anyway, so I go back and I talk to them about this. I got to speed up this story a little bit. So I go talk to Father James. I tell him all about this, and he's blown away and texting a friend of his who wants to do a vineyard and all this. And so we set up a meeting. We go meet with him, and it gets even weirder for me because the guy with the farm, what he wants to do is Joel Salatin style, polyface farm style, rotation farming of like grass-fed beef and chickens and goats and stuff, which is like, if anybody who knows me knows it, I would drive across the United States to have a cup of coffee or give a high five to Joel Salatin. I love what he's doing in the farming world. And these people are kind of like Joel Salatin meets Dorothy Day meets Wendell Berry, man. And I'm like, and they want to play. And so Father James and people are just blown away because they've been wanting a farm and just kind of had it in their dreams down the line of like having a farm included in this Catholic worker project. And so I go for a cup of coffee at a shop that they didn't know existed. And I bump into two couples that want to convert and want to build a Catholic worker house. And they have a Catholic worker thing, and they have a 100-acre farm. Suffice to say, they're like part of the project now. And we're kind of starting the conversation about how he's got this roaster that's not hooked up and maybe we can do something with that. And so it was like this huge jump of providence. It was just like, oh my gosh. Right. So, oh, and I forgot to tell you, when I went to go do the walkthrough, I was like already like my third, it's always like three random coincidences. And then that gets my attention to look for the big one that's coming. The front, there's a giant plaque on the front of this rectory that I'm remodeling with, and it says Tole Leche, Take and Read, which is the name of the shop I run in Denver, Colorado. So there's just like three increasingly kind of like direct coincidences. And so I'm like, okay, what's going to happen? And so boom. So we meet these people. So that all happens. we have an incredible night on Saturday night, hang out and have dinner and spend time together and get to know everybody and just love these people even more, get more and more connected. And then, so then the next day, go to Mass. Mass is great. And, you know, we're hanging out afterwards. And then I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to go get another cup of coffee. And I kind of jokingly tell them, I'm like, look, I'm going for another cup of coffee. So I have a funny feeling the next shoe is going to drop. More providence. They're like, okay, I'll be like, well, I'll bring them with me. And so I go down, I go a couple blocks away. As I'm pulling in to park my car, my old roommate from Denver is standing in front of the shop. A guy that I had lived with and kind of mentored a little bit, and kind of, he is a fairly fresh convert to Catholicism. It comes from a similar background that I do, kind of in the charismatic world and the vineyard world. And here, there he is standing in front of the shop. And he's been super interested in the Catholic world and coffee and using hospitality and the ministry of presence to kind of be there and reach people. And I will come walking up, there he is in front of the shop. And I knew he had like left and moved to Michigan somewhere. I'd forgotten it was anywhere near Flint. And there he is standing in front of the shop. So we hook up there, ended up including him in the rest of the night and the big piano concert we had. And it was just insane. Now he's kind of like, now he has all this Catholic community there that he didn't even know existed. All these people, like I increased his friend group and his social, like his support world by like 20-fold in an afternoon by just bumping into him to get coffee. And I think he'll play some kind of a role and help out. So just one cool thing after another like that. So then on Monday, we go meet with Mary and talk to her about that. And they show me the Catholic worker place and the food bank. And we meet with some developers and stuff. And that's, I don't have enough time to go through all that. There's nothing really crazy interesting there other than Mary's amazing. And what they're trying to do is amazing. And the possibilities for what is a model that could develop in Flint, Michigan is absolutely amazing. So out of all this, you know, this is the kind of place that God would move. And all weekend long, this is the tip of the iceberg description. It was just like, it was one of these weekends where it's like, wow, you get out of it. And okay, so a little real fast. So we go down to, I go down and spend the night with Mark Gieschek, and Father James comes over and his friend Ed Caldwell, and they're like really, really cool people. And we had a beautiful time. So great seeing Mark and his family. And then we get up and we go to Cultivate the next day. Now, Billy Kangas' shop, I'm going to do a whole show on Billy Kangas' shop. But suffice to say, it's amazing. It's a cool project. And we do this interview. And I messed up my technology and each segment recorded on top the previous segments on the top of the previous. So by the time we are on segment 4, there was 4 layers of track on top of it. And so it's unusable. Now we do have a backup copy that we made with a little recorder on a phone. And so what I think I'm going to do, that's going to end up over on the Over the Counter podcast most likely. And, I'm going to probably put it up as my first special kind of like for the friends of the show only kind of a thing on my end of the world. But if you really don't have to do that to listen to it, I'll put a link up to it over on the Over the Counter podcast. So that audio will get available. That's why this is episode 235. 234 was lost, but we're going to keep it. We're going to do something else with it. So, man, time flies. So I'll refer back to you. There's some more stuff that I want to talk about more specifically from this trip. So you'll get some references back to this in the next episode. So let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position.
I take your place, my old stone. I take your place, my old stone.